Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast with Benji Nyson. A mammoth pod today, and that'll be this way for the rest of the week. Paris-Nice, Tirreno Adriatico, Stage 1, Paris-Nice Stage 4, and the Healthy Aging Tour, Stage 1 as well in the Netherlands. We're going to split it up on the YouTube channel into three different videos, but I know podcast on podcast players, it's better to have it in one big file. Paris-Nice first, Tirreno second as the World Tour races, and then Healthy Aging Tour last as the 2-1. Before we get into the recaps, I want to mention our show partner, Lacole, and maybe something they do that you might not be aware of, that Lacole do custom kit. So you can do, just like with the pro teams, say it was Bahrain, McLaren last year, have the custom Lacole kit. Well, you can do the same thing with Lacole. You've got, if you have a cycling club or a large group of friends, you can supply your design or maybe some artwork inspiration, and Lacole can design it in-house with their designers and confirm the order quantities before it goes into production, like a pre-purchase sort of arrangement. And then step three is the Lacole factory in Italy produce the kit and ship it to you about 8 weeks later. So it's pretty simple and I think pretty good to be able to get custom kit. Maybe it's something we could look into, Benji, for, I don't know if Lacole want to do meme kit. Is fake news, how do we do a fake news climb kit? I'm sure there'd be a lot of demand. The Charubla stage in Paris-Nice stage 4, this was a fake news climb. I'm not sure if you've seen the La Flamme Rouge profile of the last climb. It's so up and down, it's like a Vuelta climb, and 188k stage, rolling hills all day, 3,300 meters elevation, and they finish with this 7.4k, 6% climb, but it's got two sections, sustained sections of like 1,200 meters of 10 to 11%, and there's an intermediate sprint at the end of one of those sections, and then actual flat and like descending sections as well in this climb. We picked yesterday Roglic for the stage as the heavy favorite, not a genius to do that. And I think Schachmann, Guillaume Martin and co as well. So the question was, Benji, who could you get in a breakaway? And that was the problem, right? Could anyone interesting really go in a breakaway today in a one-week stage race when they haven't lost enough time up to this point? Do you think that was a problem with this stage, that it always was going to come down to the GC group?
On one end, yes. On the other, I'm not sure that it was the biggest reason. I think that either way, even if the gap was larger, Jumbo would still control this race. And that's basically what they did today. They controlled the pace throughout the entire stage. We had some riders in the breakaway, including the likes of Oliver Nasten and such. So some proper engines up there. But they can't do anything about a peloton that just doesn't give them any proper gap. And today that was nothing different. And yeah, I did not expect really that a breakaway could do anything on the stage. We were speaking about it yesterday as well, and we came to that conclusion as well during our discussion points. Did you have any thought process to how a team could upset Jumbo's Planet controlling the race and bringing Roglic towards the last climb?
There'd have to be some sort of like borderline illegal collaboration between all the other teams, and like Jonny Zagira would need to go to Casper Pedersen and Luis Leon Sanchez and Lutsenko, and they'd all need to attack on the same hill at the same time with Lawrence de Plus and catch Jumbo napping. That's pretty much, seriously, that's like probably the best way. And the later you leave it, and that's what happened, right? They Jumbo Visma were allowed to use Tony Martin and co. And if you don't attack in a coordinated fashion early, then yeah, Jumbo Visma, if it's just one, we saw Casper Pedersen, Benji, he attacked with maybe like 35 Ks to go or so. Casper for DSM, I was like, oh, maybe he's a satellite rider for Hindley or Tiesch Benoot, probably. But it's one rider. And he's a strong guy, but he just got reeled back by Jumbo Visma very quickly on that hill. We saw Stefan Bissiger yo-yoing off the back at the end of some of these climbs. I think, what was it, Col de Derbys, I think. I think it was the last descent of Montbrui. It was where Bissiger started to pop. But once they went into that final climb, which we'll get to in a second, but I was like, if they go into the final climb with at least Kruijswijk and Bennett and Roglic, Like, you can't win. I've never... I like Shacklin. I like him as a rider. He's a good, funny guy too, but he doesn't actually have a lot of wins on a finish like this in his career or up there. I like him more on the sort of endurance Liège and then finishing on the flat style course to beat Roglic. And even then, it's a tough call or a tough ask for him. But moving on to this descent, one of the last descents, Benji, or before then, sorry, the Ineos move I want to talk about. Ineos started to move up with Amador and Dennis. They signaled it, right? Like that shouldn't have come as a surprise to Jumbo Visma when they actually did start to accelerate, right?
Yep. I think that we noticed everybody slowly but surely moving up from Ineos, and just instantly they were at the front pacing like mad, but they have to pause the entire team of Jumbo to get to the front because Jumbo was sitting pretty much at the front. So it can't be that Jumbo was like, oh my God, I didn't see that one coming. There was some clear knowledge that something was about to happen, and Ineos went to the front, set up their, I think, 5-man train, 6-man train, and they started mashing it before the Montbrouilly Ascension, which is with a good 16, 15 kilometers to go, I think, something like that. And for that final climb, the breakaway still had a bit of a gap, but they weren't going to make it. So that Ineos move basically almost got the breakaway, if not actually caught them at that point.
It caught the Narsen group.
Okay. I think. Yeah, because Bernard was still ahead after Montbrouilly. But on Montbrouilly, we had some action. We had that Ineos move slowly but surely thinning out the train that was at the front. Then suddenly we had the Plus and Gegenhardt left. And instead of the Plus setting up a high pace for Gegenhardt, he went on the attack and Gegenhardt opened up the gap there. So a sneaky tactic. I don't think that is what Jumbo was expecting. I think that Jumbo would probably expect, oh, he's going to ride for Gegenhardt. But I also don't think that it's perhaps... It feels desperate. That's what I'm trying to say. They're trying something, but I don't know. I don't know what else they could have done, but I also don't think that it would remotely work in any way.
I think there's definitely one part of this stage where if you're a rival of Roglic, you want to pencil what happened, and that is when Ineos came to the front in advance of the Village on this false flat. With Amador and Dennis. And without Wout van Aert there, Kruijswijk, Ullmann and Bennett were behind Roglic. They couldn't help him at all to move up. And Roglic was isolated. There was a time where I was like, shit, if someone loses the wheel here and Ineos is super strong, he could be in trouble. And it didn't eventuate. DSM were too invested in chasing. But it's pretty easy to isolate Roglic if there's no Wout van Aert or Tony Martin there. I think, on a undulating parkour or slightly uphill to flat. And he had the watts. He just moved himself up in the wind from like 15th wheel all the way up to Tower Gegenhardt. But listen, that's not ideal. And if I was Ineos in UAE, I'd be like, hey, Dennis, Mikkel Bjerg and co, let's get something going. Oh, Dennis won't go to the tour, but Luke Rowe and Mikkel Bjerg, let's get something going. And you just got to put him under pressure like that. Maybe nothing will happen, but maybe something might. And then, I mean, you got to try something, right? So Montbrouilly, who attacked? Sorry. Laurens de Plus got brought back by DSM, Benji. But then pretty much all setting pace. When did Rémi Cavagnard attack? Was it after that climb or right at the end on the crest?
It was right at the end on the crest, and we saw him attack, and it was with a serious move going around the corner and just boom, he had like 20 meters on the peloton. And we know that Cavagnard directly goes into his TGV de Clermont-Ferrand time trial mode, not on the bars. So no puppy paws here, but he was riding legally this time around. And he kept up that pacing, and suddenly we had another move up from the peloton. That was Luis León Sánchez with, honestly, a more powerful attack than Cavagnard, in my honest opinion.
Yeah,
he bridged up to Cavagnard in no time. And I think that those two stayed together for quite a bit, but eventually Cavagnard got dropped by Luis León Sánchez, who eventually bridged up towards Julien Bernard at the front of the race. So that's the two men at the front of the race now. But we saw something happen in the peloton as well.
And, before that climb, Godu and Gegenhardt. What happened? Yes. Like, what happened there? I didn't go into the slow-mo to see who was responsible. Did Gegenhardt slide out and then Goto was behind him and crashed, or was it independent and it was a sticky corner? I couldn't figure out whether they were independent of each other, their crashes.
To me, it felt like Gegenhardt just, his wheel slipped and he went on the floor, and that caused Gegenhardt to, that caused Goto to have to go around Gegenhardt, and he ended up in the ditch next to the road. That's how I saw it. And it looked at the start that he was getting on his bike relatively quickly, Gegenhardt, that he was going to continue and get to the back of the front group. And Goto took a bit longer to get back up. We saw that both the, I'm not sure it was the plus or a teammate that was waiting for Gegenhardt in the peloton, or not even waiting, just like moving to the back of the group. And we also saw that for Goto, it was stopping and literally on the spot saw that his guy crashed and directly stopped and waited for him. And Gegenhardt started riding first, but eventually we saw that Goto and Almirai passed Gegenhardt going back to the group and actually caught back up while Gegenhardt looked to be looking at his wrist or something, and unfortunately had to abandon the race a few minutes later. So second Ineos leader out of this Paris-Nice. Not their happiest moment, that is for sure. And let's hope his injuries, his wrist injury, is not that bad, I guess.
Yeah, it's a real shame, but I hope he's not too badly injured. It's not probably the most serious crash, but I wanted to see what Theo Gegenhardt could do on his final climb. I'm not sure if that might have preceded the Cavagnard attack, which was after the, sort of the lull after that crash when people were trying to figure out what to do. Goto bridged back up through the convoy pretty easily. He was hustling on that descent. He didn't seem too fazed, but I still think it affected him. 8Ks to go. Bernard led Cavagnard and Sanchez by 15 seconds. They led the peloton by 45 seconds. The climb 6 to 7 Ks long. I don't think they count the first K of it properly, but it was looked like climbing to me from 7Ks to go. And Cavagnard had a mechanical, Benji, and I don't know what happened. He got stuck in the small ring in the biggest, in the smallest sprocket, but the hardest gear at the back, and in the small ring, which I haven't seen before. Normally, and because he was like pedaling 30 RPM, and he's like, "What the hell? He's trying to change the gear." Because usually, I thought with when DI2 goes flat, it will chuck you into the small ring at the front, but then it'll let you for a little bit adjust at the back. And it won't, maybe he went completely flat and then it like defaults into the small ring at the front, but then he couldn't, it just left him in whatever he was at the back. But that was a shame. Do you think it changed the result today, or he had no chance anyway?
Yeah, if you look at the end of the stage that we'll discuss in a second, then I don't think it would have mattered at all.
Yeah, I don't think so. So 5Ks to go. Bernard and Sanchez is bridged to him. They lead the peloton by 25 seconds. There's this steep 1,300-meter section, and the peloton is starting to really thin out. George Bennett in the Kiwi National Champs jersey. I'm struggling. I'm just got to get myself used to the different color jersey with him. I'm not sure I like it.
The reason I don't like it is that I think they had to switch it from like the black-white version to the white-black version.
Yeah, to invert the color.
What they forgot to do was change the yellow color of the pants to the white color because of the branding of Jumbo, obviously wanting a yellow color there. And I think that ruins it for me because now there's complete opposite coloring between the top of the kit and like the bottom of the kit. And I don't like it. I really don't like it.
All right. Benji's out on that New Zealand Champs kit. Send angry reacts only in the YouTube comments if you feel particularly strongly about it. I knew with this intermediate sprint coming up with the bonus seconds, and then there's 10 bonus seconds obviously available on the line, that 15 seconds was going to be pretty dicey for Julien Bernard, who's been out there all day, and Luis Leon Sanchez, who's a strong rider, but not the climbing level of Roglic and co. DSM were very active, Benji, for Tiesch Benoot. Could you figure out, were they attacking with Hindley? Were they just trying to bring moves back with him? I couldn't really figure out whether they were trying to go for the stage with Hindley or he was just riding defensively for Tiesch Benoot.
I really can't tell. It's weird to see Hindley ride for Benoot for GC, which is for me at least, but knowing what happened at Paris-Nice last year, we know that Benoot has a 1 week stage race in his capabilities for GC, obviously not to win Paris-Nice in my opinion, but he can definitely do decent in these kind of races. And yeah, it looked like Hindley was the person who had to spice things up for Benoit. And I think that Hindley isn't really looking almost remotely near the form that he was in the Giro last year. And I hope that he can improve that. Otherwise, it might have been a bit of a one-time story. But it's obviously still very early on in the season. But yeah, I'm not sure that this is the form I'd expect from Hindley. I think that Gegenhardt is looking much better. And they, yeah, I kind of see them on a similar level after that Giro of last year.
I think Hindley's not good at climbs like this. I think he prefers the longer climbs than, yeah, like a pure high mountain stage. His TT is obviously no good. This group had been thinned out quite a lot. 4Ks to go now on this climb. It flattened out for a bit, and then it was going to kick up for another 1,200 meters at 10%. Michael Matthews for Bike Exchange was still here. I've been saying he's climbing better. He lost a lot of weight last year. Seems to have kept that off. We saw that in Torino and Milano San Remo. He is climbing differently, I think, to in previous years. And Bissiger in the yellow jersey had obviously been dropped. Matthew's 9 seconds behind on GC, I think. So if he came together in the group, he had a chance to get that yellow jersey back. I couldn't believe he was there, Benji. Or do you think is this the same sort of guy you'd see when he was powering behind Gilbert on the Cowberg sort of 5 years ago or however long ago it was?
Yeah, he certainly can achieve wonderful things when it comes to climbing that people don't expect. And it's often a bit inconsistent. And I think that's why we don't expect it. We had Tirreno last year where we saw lots of stuff. And he was on mountain stage in the breakaway and such. He almost beat Carretero at the top of a KOM of a mountain. And I think that we kind of got botched off that thought process by the Giro, in which, to me, he didn't achieve what we expected of him. Then again, we kind of expected him to win every single stage that was remotely a hilly sprint or sprint. So that wasn't really the best prediction. Yeah, what?
With COVID. Bike Exchange pulled out with COVID, didn't it? Oh, no,
he wasn't on bike. Yeah, but he didn't ride.
He was on DSM. He's Australian. He's always been on Bike Exchange. Anyway, back to this stage. Pierre Latour has attacked now, second time he's attacked. He attacked on every lull, 3.5Ks to go. He's followed by Michael Matthews. Roglic perhaps worried about the intermediate bonus seconds, which are like 600 meters up the road. Absolutely. I think Roglic was just bored, to be honest. You could see he was nose breathing, third wheel the whole climb. People are flapping about around him. Kreuzvijk had pulled things back and was gone. He's like, well, attack is the best form of defense. And this was just an absolute classic Roglic attack with about 3.1Ks to go. It's just that, you know, when he's in form, in the saddle, spinning a super high cadence, and he had Izaguirre, I think, on the wheel following him. In the draft, you have to admit, and he bridged across to Luis Leon, went past him, didn't even sit in his slipstream very long, and then dropped Izaguirre off the wheel, and I was like, this is done. Because no one's going to be strong enough to chase. You think that was because of the intermediate sprint coming up, Benji, that Roglic won one of those seconds, which he then took, obviously? Or do you think this is a new Roglic wanting to attack early because of maybe criticism of being too defensive? What do you think?
Well, I think it's a combination of multiple things. First of all, it's the last steep section of the climb. After that, it becomes less steep from 10% to like 5% in the last 2 kilometers. So that is the move or the position on the climb where you can make such a move. Obviously, the intermediate sprint is at the end of that section, which means that it benefits even more to attack at that point. Now, the problem and the reason why we didn't expect him to attack like this at this very moment, or at least I didn't yesterday, was because it has been since, I think, the Slovenian Championships against Pogacar, where we saw an attack by Roglic more than 4 kilometers from the line, except for Col de Loz. But I think that Col de Loz is a bit of a weird exception because technically Lopez attacked first. So yeah, I don't think we can really count that. So I think this is, yeah, it's been ages and I like it because it spiced it up. I think that the chase could have done much better. I don't think they could have caught them because you still have Matthews, you got Lewis Hamilton there. And instead of like setting up a proper pace, either of them, they based each a tiny bit, then they went to the back of the group, and then at the same time they moved back up at a high pace, and they looked at each other at the front and were like, are you going to pace or am I going to pace?
Yeah.
And there was no decision.
Vlasov too. And Sharkland and Mart, they were all looking at each other. And yeah, it was when they were looking at each other that I was like, they have no chance, even though
Do you think that Vlasov made a mistake having Izagirre react to Roglic's attack instead of himself?
I've never seen Vlasov ever snap onto someone's wheel. I'm not sure he is that sort of guy. Like, when I remember all the moves in the Vuelta, he seems to need a long time to get up to speed and react. Like, do you ever remember a move going in the Vuelta or other races where he immediately, if he sees a guy attacking, jumps onto their wheel? I usually think of him dieseling back to moves once they slow down, and then he might attack himself.
I think the only moment where we saw Vlasov react like that was for Fuglsang in Lombardia last year on the attacks of George Bennett. And I think I indeed didn't really expect him to snap. But then again, it's kind of parkour knowledge as well, because you know that if someone attacks on the steeper portion here, it's going to be really difficult to bridge back up on the less steep portion afterwards if it's a time trialist like Roglic as well. But also the fact that the occasions where Vlasov can bridge back up slowly but surely on the climb happens on a climb. The last portion of the stage is, yeah, it's still a climb, but it's much, much shallower when it comes to the gradient. And as a consequence, I did not see it remotely possible for Vlasov to bring this back after that move. And Izagirre clearly was not good enough to follow Roglic there, because he just died in his wheel and then like boinked back to the group. But Benoit looking pretty fine, I think, in that second group, making a good move together with Sharkman and also Vlasov there in the last 2 kilometers, but eventually didn't bring it back.
Well, you saw, Benji, to your point, Roglic went out to 22 seconds at least on them when they weren't working together. And then when they started working together, they brought back, I think, 7-8 seconds in the last kilometer. So I think this could have been much closer, as you said, if they'd worked together. But he got that big gap where he was strongest. And maybe it's just a parkour thing, and he always planned to attack there today and take those extra bonus seconds. It makes sense. Why let Schachmann attack you later if you know across a longer climb, going harder, Roglic is going to be better than Schachmann 9 times out of 10. So Roglic canters in or waltzes in to his, I don't know how many Vuelta wins he's had in his career. He's so consistent. He just keeps winning. Wins Paris-Nice stage 4. Just a fantastic attack, and he's on a fantastic level already. Sharkman second, Guillaume Martin third, Thijs Benoot fourth, Vlasov fifth, Hamilton sixth, same time as those other four riders, all on 12 seconds behind Roglic. Roglic also taking 10 bonus seconds. I think Sharkman taking 6th, Martin 4, if I'm right. Godu 7th, Pasha 8th, Latour 9th, Izagirre 10th, and Haig in that group as well, with Bagui 16 seconds back. GC, now Roglic moves into the leader's jersey, 35 seconds ahead of Sharkman. McNulty into 3rd, 37 seconds behind Roglic. I mean, when your TT is that good, you're only 2 seconds behind Sharkman. Vlasov 4th, 41 seconds back. Izagirre 5th, 43 seconds back. Matteo Jorgensen, 6th, the American. So 2 Americans in the top 10. It's pretty good to see. Jorgensen came 16th on this stage. Any other thoughts on this Paris-Nice stage, Benji?
The only rider I'd love to shine a light on here is that Pere Pantera, my call for a top 10 in a Grand Tour, is 11th on the stage today, and he moved on to 11th in GC. So the only thing he's terrible at is time trial. So if he can fix that, like Gus and Guillaume Martin, same issue, then he can get higher. It. Otherwise, it's going to be troublesome.
Bardet fixed it on Azure Douda. I'm being snarky. Anyways, business as usual for Roglic. To be honest, I would have been very surprised if this result didn't happen. And if he didn't win this stage, or he lost time, maybe not win, maybe Sharkman won or whatever, but if he had lost time to those other guys or any else on this stage, I think Jumbo-Visma should be very concerned, because he's the best GC rider here. And Jumbo Visma have the strongest all around. They've got a Tour de France strength team here. So, yeah. Stage 5 tomorrow at Vienne to Bolen. It's not enough. It's a sprint stage, and Roglic is just too far in the lead for the bonus seconds to matter. If Matthews was within 10 seconds or so, maybe he could get come back to him, but he's over well back on him. Intermediate sprints are at 35Ks, 52Ks, flat, and then the second intermediate sprint is at the end of a little roller, about 18Ks from the finish. It'll be interesting to see if Schachmann or someone tries to launch up there. I think Schachmann has to try and claw back some seconds, particularly if he wants to maintain his podium position if others attack him. What do you think tomorrow, Benji? Bennett again, or are those hills actually going to be a problem?
It depends on who rides them and at what pace, obviously, but they're relatively close to the finish line, so something can happen. But I think that Bennett can get over them, to be honest. I think that it's going to be a mass sprint, and I think that if the situation, like the situation which Bol came a few days ago, won't happen on every single stage. Bennett and Mirku are just more consistent together, so as a consequence, it's obviously the first choice to say Bennett in these kind of situations, and it will only be someone else if Mirku and Bennett are not in the right position in the last kilometer. And yeah, that's, I think, the basic precipice of a sprint stage with Bennett and Mirku at the start here these days.
Yeah, exactly right. Bennett and Mirku are the favorites, I think, but then it's a lottery for between about 7 or 8 other sprinters who can win this stage. Pedersen, Laporte, even Cockard, maybe, probably not. Bol, Matthews, Greipel. Ackermann, Greipel, or Zabel. I don't know what they're doing. Where did Greipel finish on GC today, Benji? He's
so sad. He's disappointing his transformation to a GC rider.
Yeah, he's going to need to work on that. All right, on to Tirreno Adriatico. We didn't do a preview because we're flat out, in case you hadn't noticed the amount of content we're producing. But just a quick overview of this absolutely stacked field at Tirreno Adriatico. Van der Poel here for Alps and Phoenix, but apparently they're sprinting for Tim Merlier. As you deserve, Citroën has brought their mixed squad, Cher and Van Avermaet, Vendrame. Team Bike Exchange have Simon Yates for GC, as well as Luka Mezgec for the sprints. Astana Premier Tech have, I don't know, really know what they're doing here. Aramburu and Gorka Izagirre maybe for stage wins, and Fuglsang, obviously, is he going for GC anymore? I don't know what Fuglsang's doing. I remember he said he's not going for GC anymore. Maybe that was just Grand Tours. Bahrain victorious, Landa, Bilbao, Fred Wright, pretty decent sprinter. So Landa's their GC man. Bora Hansgrohe got Sagan here. I thought that was a typo the other day. Sagan recovered from COVID, obviously. He was up there in the sprint. Good to see. They also have Conrad, maybe, for GC. Cofidis Viviani looked good at the UAE Tour. Quickstep got Alaphilippe, Almeida, Askren, Ballerini, stacked. Well, I was going to say Stieber, but I said stacked anyway. but they also got Alvaro Hodge. We'll get to that in a second. Bit of drama there. EF Education, Nippo, Igita, Simon Kerr, Bettiol. Who else? Zakarin for Gazprom, Pino for Groupama. Ineos have brought the most obscene team I have ever seen in a one-week race. Bernal, Castroviejo, Ganna, Kwiatkowski, Puccio, Sivakov, Thomas. What the fuck is that? Like, that is a Tour de France level squad, or Giro squad. That's outrageous. Bernal for GC, obviously, and Thomas two, I guess, probably not. Van Aert for Jumbo-Visma, Foss maybe for GC, but mainly a train for Van Aert. Wellens and Ewan for Lotto Soudal. Soler for Movistar. Quintana for Arkea Samsic. Bardet. It's just a crazy field. Pozzo Vivo. Pogacar. I'm now getting down to UAE team members. Pogacar, Gaviria, mixed lead out and GC team, and Nibali, Ciccone, Moschetti, Quinn Simmons for Trek Segafredo. I've just spoken a lot about that start list, Benji. Are you shook by how good that start list is? And why is this Tirreno start list so strong?
Like, it's genuinely insane, and you don't usually see this too much, because I think that it's usually more evenly spread between Paris-Nice and Tirreno, and I think the only real person that is missing to make it real top-notch is Roglic, who is at Paris-Nice. So I think Tirreno's over the years proving much more interesting than Paris-Nice for me personally. I have always cared more about Tirreno in the last, I think, 10 years. I think the last one I really cared about GC a lot in Paris-Nice, who was going to win that and such, was the one that Contador won. So you can already imagine it's a few years ago. But I think it also was a much harder climbing parkour in the past. Like a good 13 years ago or something, it was more mountainous to my knowledge. And I feel like Paris-Nice has moved into a bit more of a hilly terrain, while Tirreno has done a similar type thing. So the parkours are pretty similar in both. I think that Tirreno is better for the sprinters, though. And that displays by the fact that you've got just much more flat sprints here than in Paris-Nice, I'd say. And I think that now the difference is more between what region a rider is already in. Like, people were in Strade and such. I don't think they go home from Strade and then go back to Tirreno and afterwards go back home and then go back to Milano-San Remo. I think that's also one of the reasons that a lot of people go to Tirreno now to prep for Milano-San Remo, because they're already in that region. And yeah.
COVID as well.
Yep.
You don't want to be going between traveling if you don't need to. But today's stage, as Benji mentioned, should have been a sprint stage, 156Ks. It had three climbs, circuits, the Pitordo climb, 2.7Ks at 7.5%, but that was in the first 64Ks. Then it was pancake flat for the next 90Ks or 100Ks even at the crest of the final climb. And there was an intermediate sprint, 107Ks in. But apart from that, they were on the coast for a flat sprint finish. Sprinters we got here, Ewan, Melier, Gaviria for UAE, Wout van Aert for Jumbo-Visma with a train actually today. Probably I'd say a slightly weaker sprint field than at Paris-Nice. Ballerini and Hodge for De Koenig Quickstep and Viviani for Cofidis and Sagan for Bora. But I got to admit, we joined this pretty late because we were watching Paris-Nice and this had came to last 4 kilometers. But did anything interesting happen in the first 150Ks of this stage, Benji, because it looked like it was a formality sprint up to that point to me?
Very good question. I started watching with about 3.5 kilometers to go, so I can't tell you. So let's head straight for the sprint. I think the teams that we were focusing on to kind of lead stuff out, I was looking forward to see if Jumbo was going to set up a train for Van Aert, because Van Aert would get another opportunity for sprinting. Before this stage, he had a 3 out of 5 win rate to the sprints he rode, because he won 2 sprints at the Tour de France of the 3 he rode. He won a sprint at Dauphiné, last year. He podiumed Milano-Torino, so that's 3 victories out of the 5 sprints he rode before this. So I was looking forward whether he was going to extend that percentage and make that a better ratio, because if you can keep that up, that's one of the best ratios of a sprinter at the moment up there. And I was looking forward to see if Jumbo would set something up. They eventually did set something up. Jumbo was moving to the front on the left side of the road with a 3-4 rider train. One by one, they kept, spending their riders. Some weird stuff was happening on the left side of the road, where I think Vanderpool was trying to bring Merlier to the front, but then Merlier lost his wheel. And then Vanderpool was like 20 meters ahead of everybody, except for like the people that were on the left side of the road, and Merlier was nowhere near Vanderpool, so Vanderpool had to go back to Merlier and try and find him again. I don't think Vanderpool is good at leading out someone, or at least not good at bringing someone to the front.
We found what he's not good at. We saw this in Tirreno. We saw it in Tirreno last year, Benji. Remember in Tirreno last year when he would like surge way like so hard out of corners and gap Merlier off the wheel. Now maybe Merlier is not good enough in a stacked World Tour sprint, but I think Vanderpool is actually not a great lead out man, because he would do like 1400 watts for 5 seconds, drop his team, be on the wrong side of the road on his own, look back and like, oh no, where is everyone? Merlier is right at the back being like, what the hell man? Then he'd drift back and rinse and repeat. So Alpecin couldn't, they've been at the front chasing a lot today. Merlier's had a good start to the season up north. He was way too deep, Merlier. So he pretty much didn't have a chance with 1K to go. Jumbo-Visma, as Benji said, was set up, but then they were spending riders quickly, and eventually they dropped Wout van Aert off or ran out of steam And basically, they were letting Wafanat look after himself. So he slid onto the Gaviria train, which had Richese, Ivo Oliveira, I think, was in there as well. So I think it was Oliveira and then, yeah, Richese. He slid onto that train on the left-hand side. Wafanat said, it was different to the Paris-Nice sprints, Benji. I was thinking, as I was watching it overhead, I was like, if this was the Paris-Nice sprint and Wout van Aert was trying to slip onto Gaviria's wheel here, he would cop a heavy shoulder. I can't remember who was on his wheel. Now, maybe it's a respect thing with Wout van Aert. He's always a big guy, but this is a pretty clean sprint for what could have been a tricky finish. Ballerini and Hodge, I couldn't tell which one was which. They're both just together on the right-hand side of Quickstep. They were struggling to move up. They were on the slower right-hand side. This is from, as you look at it, overhead. Ewan was in the middle with clear air to his right, which was quite good. I thought at 500, it looked okay for Ewan. Wout van Aert's fourth wheel now. Richese's starting to pull for Gaviria on the left-hand side. Gaviria's second wheel. Ewan's got Du Bois trying to move up through the middle, and he's trying to... Du Bois is trying to sprint to the right-hand side, but Du Bois just wasn't... It's like in the UAE Tour, Benji. He's like trying, but he can't make a difference, and he's not going quicker than Richese, so he couldn't move Ewan up. Richese runs out of steam, and I swear it's like 275 meters to go, and Wout van Aert just launches off Gaviria's wheel before Gaviria can sprint on the barrier side to Richese's left. So Richese's obviously going to do his lead out and then leave a small gap for Gaviria to sprint through on his left, just like we saw Mirko and Bennett do at UAE Tour. But Gaviria, Wout van Aert already jumped to the right-hand side. He's got a gap then off... Well, Gaviria can't. He was going the other way. Ewan wasn't on Wout van Aert's wheel, so Wout van Aert's initial kick is gapped, I think, even other lead-out men. And then Ewan, who'd followed Du Bois, has to start sprinting into air, basically, at that point as well. And Gaviria comes on the left-hand side, gets into Wout van Aert's slipstream, which prevents Ewan getting Wout van Aert's slipstream from 125 to 50 to go. Ewan eventually outkicks Gaviria, but barely gets any Wout van Aert's slipstream, tries to come around Wout van Aert's right-hand side. Wout van Aert's been sprinting for what feels like 30 seconds, sprints in a straight line. Got to respect fair play from Wout van Aert, even though he knew Ewan was coming hard to his right, and Wout van Aert maintains it to the line. How did that make you feel, Benji, as a Wout van Aert super fan?
As a Wout van Aert super fan? Well, I'm just going to debunk that first. I'm not a Wout van Aert super fan because I'm going to say something. Okay. I'm apparently a Wout van Aert super fan now, but I think that Wout van Aert is one of the three best sprinters in the world.
I agree.
Okay. I'm glad that's not a super fan take anymore.
What is a sprint, though? What's a sprint?
What's a sprint?
This is very existential question.
A sprint is when... I don't know. When they all ride to the finish line very fast.
Because I think in Champs-Élysées, it's between Ewan and Bennett. If they both get a lead out on either side of the road and they get dropped off at 100, I think it's 50-50. But I think they're going to beat Wout van Aert in that situation. I think at Paris-Nice stage one, I think Wout van Aert's the best, just about, with an uphill finish. I think a sprint that has a few climbs before it, he's the best. A sprint after the Poggio, he's better than Ewan and Bennett. So like, it depends what is a sprint. Do you mean just like a traditional bunch sprint like we saw at Tirreno?
Yeah, I'm saying a traditional bunch sprint like we see in Tirreno and Torino last year as well. I believe that is in the top three. I can't compare him to both Bennett and Ewan because we haven't seen him sprint against all too frequently because he's only sprinted six times in the last year, and he won four of those at 66%. His win to sprint ratio is the highest of every single sprinter in the world. And he's not even allowed to sprint half of the time.
Sorry for hitting you with the Søren Kierkegaard existentialism questions so late in the evening. But yeah, I agree. Even with the a pure mass sprint, I think Wout van Aert is up there because he got a bit of a lead out today and it allowed him to get onto Gaviria's wheel. But you don't think that, like, do you think he's just way more consistent than Case Bol, riders like that? And that Mads Pedersen, seconds at Paris-Nice. I think Wout van Aert, yeah, you just got to look at the ratio of the sprints he does contest. And they're always at the top level too. Like, what if he got sent to a lot of like pro races or smaller stage races? He would be destroying them as well. I think he's better than Merlier, who's been looking good at those, you know, Le Semin style races too. But anyway, the results. Van Aert first, Ewan second, Gaviria third, Vandrame fourth. Nice result for him.
Yep.
Luka Mezgec fifth, Merlier sixth. Get this. Hodge seventh, Ballerini eighth. They finished next to each other. Ivan Garcia Cortina ninth, and Hugo Hofstetter 10th. Sagan in the group 11th. I think that's good to see from Sagan, just up there being competitive, you know, straight after COVID. I think that's really encouraging. He's always, I loved his results at Tirreno in the last decade. Quick step, Benji. What the fuck are they doing sprinting for Hodge, not Ballerini, after Ballerini's season so far?
Yeah, I don't get it. I really don't get it. Hodge for 2 years has not shown anything after that crash. He had the injury, he had the surgery last year, also leading into that, or 2019 already, the surgery after that crash. I don't know whether it was last year or 2 years ago. No, I don't remember. My memory is fading, man. But I think it's pretty clear that Ballerini is a good sprinter now. And I think Hodge is not only not achieving anything, he's basically countering the abilities of the team here by being in the team, which is obviously not really Hodge's fault. The DS shouldn't have chosen to let him also sprint. They should have chosen who to go for. And additionally, I don't think Hodge at the moment deserves to be in this race. I believe that Cavendish deserves more to be in Tirreno from his capabilities of the last year.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, they got to let Hodge sprint for something. Like, he's in a contract year. He's a young guy. They got to let him try and prove
Brussels
something.
Brussels Cycling Classic or something. I don't know.
Yeah, but the point is, which Benji's trying to make, Tirreno Adriatico World Tour level stage race with Ballerini in the team is not the place to be letting people try or get back to form. I think there's plenty of Belgian races and 1-1, 2-1 races where you can go and try and get your eye back in. I think they'll ride for Ballerini, I think, for the rest of the race. I'd be very surprised if they didn't. But yeah, Tirreno Adriatico, bunch sprint, Wout van Aert first. He takes the bonus seconds, Benji. Now, Jumbo-Visma have been rubbishing the notion that he can compete for GC at Tirreno because he's, you know, they called him overweight in the media, and they said, oh, he's not in good condition for GC. He's been doing other sort of, he's coming off altitude. He's 4 seconds, well, against ahead of the GC guys. He's got a 10-second lead already because obviously Ewan probably won't be up there on GC. So 10-second lead. Tomorrow, Benji, look at this finish. Well, we got 211-kilometer stage, 201-kilometer stage. Flat for the first 100 or 90 Ks. Then a few rollers, nothing too crazy. I think they got the Poggio alla Croce, 3.5 Ks at 7%. I don't think that should worry Van Aert too much. And then the final climb to Chiusdino is 7.5 Ks at 3.5%. That is like, it just gets steeper every single kilometer. First case, 2%, second case, 3%, third case, 3%, fourth case, 3%, then it's 3.5%, 4.3%, 5.3% in the last K, and then the last, I think, 500 meters is about 5% as well. So, Wout van Aert's the favorite tomorrow. Am I?
Van der Poel?
Pardon?
Van der Poel?
Oh, yeah, he's pretty good.
He's pretty good.
What sort of finish does this? This is like quite a tricky one that I don't think we've previewed before, Benji.
I love
like
it.
A long false flat drag that continually gets harder. And it's like if they ride it really easy at the start, it will change completely who can be there at the finish. Now, I don't think Ewan or Gaviria will be there, but what about Vendrame, Benji? What about Ballerini? It's probably
Ballerini
not
Ballerini could do this. I think Ballerini could genuinely do this. I think Ballerini was up there with the moment that Van Aert made his first move in Strade Bianche. Then Ballerini had a puncture and was basically out of contention for the entire rest of Strade Bianche at the worst moment ever. So we don't know how far he would have gotten that. Eventually, he ended up 17th, which wasn't real because then it apparently meant that Ballerini crossed the line 17th after skipping three sand sectors in Strade Bianche. So he just DNF'd. But I still think that his capabilities are very high. I think in Liguria, he also was pretty high up until we had an attack. I don't know who attacked, was it?
Oh, he was there late. No, he was there late. And that was those are steeper climbs.
Yeah.
And that Tour de la Provence finish he won on stage two had steeper sections than anything on this. This is a gradual climb where a draft will be very important. That Provence stage, he was up there. He was the only sprinter up there, quote-unquote sprinter, in a group with Ciccone, Jorgensen, Bernal, Moscon, and co. I think Ciccone came second. Dylan Terns was up there at the finish too. So that was a harder finish. This is a longer finish. Who do you think will take it up? Do you think Alpecin Phoenix will try to lead out Van der Poel? Do you think Jumbo-Visma will try and set pace for Wout van Aert and drop the quote-unquote pure sprinters? Will this be hard enough, Benji, for Conrad Almeida Pogacar, or you don't think so?
I don't think it's going to be hard enough for Conrad Almeida and Pogacar. I also don't think that you need to go for Almeida if you've got a Ballerini in the team there. I think it's going to be way too tough for the likes of Viviani. Sorry?
He's
like on the brink, but you know, because
he'll lead out Ballerini, I think. It depends. If Ballerini's there, Alaphilippe will lead him out, I think.
Yeah. Ah, it's so difficult because
they got a great lead out, Benji.
But Alaphilippe is also going for GC, I would expect here. Because, like, there's only one mountain stage. And if he wrote the same way that he did at Provence, he can top three GC.
True. I don't know. It's going to be very interesting to see what Quickstep do tomorrow. They have three riders that could potentially... Nah, Almeida probably won't win, but if it's a super hard climb, harder than it looks on paper, and it's ridden really hard, Alaphilippe can be up there on this finish. Probably wouldn't beat Van der Poel or Wout van Aert, though. But then if it's easier and they can do a great lead out with Asgreen and Stibar and Van Leyburg and Alaphilippe for Ballerini, Ballerini has a good chance for this stage as well. I think Wout van Aert won't really mind. And Van der Poel, like Wout van Aert and Van der Poel are not getting dropped on this climb. It's just not happening. No. What about Ineos, Benji? Kwiatkowski? No, he's not. I don't know. I think they're just going to be in damage conservation mode, like trying not to have Bernal get distanced. Garcia Cortina? I'm trying to find a dark horse.
Garcia Cortina would definitely be someone that I'd name a dark horse, but I haven't seen anything from him yet this season, so I don't know. Ciccone was close on that stage that you just mentioned from Ballerini and Provence. But Ciccone also isn't well known for his best sprint. I think he just had a great day that day. So he hasn't consistently performed sprinting at that level, I would say. And the other names I would think of when seeing this finish, it's Simon Clark for a top five. He was good at Strade, something like that. He was one of the names I had in mind. But outside of that, it's kind of... The chances are kind of slim, to be honest.
Say the name you want to say, Benji. Yes, there we go. I was like, there's no way he doesn't say Aaron Beru for an uphill finish.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. Aaron Beru, I mean, he's got to win eventually, hasn't he?
Feels bad, Nathan, man.
2016 Nathan Haas. But also, what about this guy? He's pretty good rider. He's been good at Tirreno, good in uphill finishes, mixed terrain before in the last 20Ks. Peter Sagan.
I forgot he was here.
I think he's going to top five. Minimum.
He wasn't amazing in the sprint today. I don't know what...
He wasn't far back, Benji. I know he came 11th, but... he wasn't actually that far back. It was like a big bunch that he was in. He wasn't like... that many wheels behind Wafanad and Ewan. That was what I found encouraging.
It's encouraging, but I've got so much difficulty with this whole COVID thing, with expecting somebody to be at a certain level afterwards. We saw Lutsenko be very inconsistent after his COVID. Gaviria as well.
That's just Lutsenko. I think that's just who he's always been.
That's kind of true. Yeah. I don't know.
It looks like Sagan to me. I'd love it. How good would it be? I really want this to happen. I want Sagan to win ahead of Wapana and Van der Poel. Kind of like when, yeah, I'm not going to do another NBA analogy. Actually, Benji gets really confused by them. But yeah, just to, after all the hype he's heard about these two, Wapana today, Van der Poel at Strade, if Sagan won, that would be so good. And good for the sport too, to have him back winning against top, top names as well. So I'd love to see it. But I think Wapana or Van der Poel will be up there in this finish. It's tailor-made for those.
You got to choose, man.
Oh, do I?
Yeah.
Well, why not?
Van der Poel.
Oh, well, yeah. You're always going to go with the opposite to me. One of us, that way, one of us is right, and everyone can say the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast correctly predicted the winner. But that looks like a fantastic stage for Tirreno Adriatico tomorrow. Maybe there's going to be someone attacking like Alaphilippe on the earlier climbs. I would love to see that as well. Maybe Alaphilippe attacks at the intermediate sprint about 15 Ks before the finish, a little climb up to Monticiano, trying to take some bonus seconds back as well. Could be a pretty exciting race. That was our Tirreno wrap. Now we're on to the Healthy Aging Tour. 2-1 race, but the start list is stacked. We've already mentioned it a couple of times. Drops the Col is riding here. The Col, title sponsor of the Drops the Col team. Actually did pretty well today. As Conti team getting right up there. Assen to Assen, 126K stage around some sort of F1 circuit. I don't really know. It was a race car circuit, I think. It's in the Netherlands. It's flat. It's, I don't know. They did like 300 meters elevation, which is a lot for the Netherlands, apparently, but out of 127Ks. Yep. Bunch sprint. The sprinters we got here, Kirsten Wild, Hosking, Amelie Diedrichsen for Trek. We were like, in our preview, we're like, would Diedrichsen be back to the level she's shown before in sprints? Lorena Wiebes, if I've mentioned on DSM already. Who else, Benji?
Norsgaard,
the revelation at the start of the season. Emma Norsgaard, the Danish national champ for Movistar.
Jolindor,
sprinter, Belgian sprinter for ST Works. ST Works just keep winning. But yeah, I thought the main favourites were Dor, Wiebes, and Kirsten Wild were the like lock top three favourites, to be honest, for this stage. And that's just the way sprints have been for the last long time in women's cycling, the last couple of years at least. Particularly, like, Wiebes is the quickest in the world by far. But it was pretty exciting, this flat stage, Benji. And we'll get to the sprint in a second, but Danijke Hengeveld, young Dutch rider for GT Krush Tanap, very strange name for that team, 18 years old. We're like, oh, I flicked it on with 7Ks to go. I was like, oh, 25 second gap, 30 second gap. You know, she just, they'll reel her in when they want to. It'll be easy. She just stayed out there forever and ever and ever. And do you think that affected the sprint? That Hengeveld stayed out there until like the last 150 meters?
I think that it did, but I think a lot influenced the sprint today. If we haven't gone over it yet, the last kilometer of this circuit is pretty treacherous, and I don't think it should be treacherous. There's a lot of opportunities on this parkour to not make it treacherous. And the problem that I see is that in the last 350 meters, I was going to say kilometers, but that's not the case. In the last 350 meters of each circuit that they do here, you've got where the sprint is going to be sprinted, obviously, towards the finish line. And there's a chicane literally in the last 350 meters that first goes to the left, then to the right, and then there's another bend to the right around towards the finish line. So you've basically got three corners in the last 350 meters, which in the first few times they passed there, I was like, nah, they could get through there pretty safely. But I wasn't thinking, like, if they do this at a sprinting speed, there's no way they get through that unharmed. And the odd part about it is, like, behind the line, there's, like, a straight line of, like, 400 meters, 300 meters that they could have extended it and made the finish line later. And I think that would have influenced a lot here, because let me go into the last section. I think that it all really came down together in the last kilometer, really, to be honest. She had a tiny gap on the group then, on the peloton group, that was being led by first DSM as well, leading the group, but also the team of Jolindore also doing quite a bit of work. And it got really treacherous into those last 400 meters because she had a gap of like 20 meters going into that chicane on the group, which was already the sprinters coming to the fore. And the problem there is, when they go into that corner, then they obviously are going to try and take the inner corner of the other part of the chicane. And as a consequence, a lot of people that go through the first part of that chicane take it really wide. And one rider, I don't know how she stayed up her bike. She almost rode straight into the barrier on the left side of the road. And she tried to get back into the group. And that caused some chaos in the group. And there was a bit of a split between like the first, I think, 8 riders and the rest of the group. And in those first 8 riders, it was Alice Barnes taking on the sprint first. Lorena Wibbs in second wheel. I think Yolin Dora was 4th or 5th wheel back at that point. And the annoying part about the last 200 meters is that bend that I spoke about. The bend going into the finishing line. And Alice Barnes is taking the inner corner. But coming out of the corner, she doesn't really turn parallel to the road. She kind of keeps going forward and slowly turns to the finish line, which means that she ends up basically halfway the road instead of at the barrier on the left side of the road. So
yeah, she goes the shortest line, as if you're doing a TT on the Imola circuit. If you remember all the guys doing and women doing the TT on the Imola circuit, they like go apex on these F1 circuits in the finish, rather than following the bend across to her right. And yeah, that caused problems, Benji.
Yes, because Lorena Wibbs was in her wheel, and Lorena Wibbs was, well, she thought that Alice Barnes was going to turn towards the finishing line, so Wibbs did so as well, a bit too close to the wheel of Alice Barnes, surely, because she ended up crossing with her front wheel to the back wheel of Alice Barnes, trying to move a bit to the right to go to the finish line and actually follow parallel to the road. And it caused Wibbs to crash pretty heavily. She rolled over a few times.
Acceleration. She's like just started to like sprint. Yeah.
And as a consequence, she touched Alice Barnes' wheel. Alice Barnes was like, oh, what's happening here? She tried to get back into sprint mode in the last few meters, but behind those two riders, there was another person that was coming up, Yolin Dora, that had to evade Wibbs, so also had to break a tiny bit. I don't think she lost as much momentum.
No one else crashed.
Yeah, I don't get how no one crashed, but that's good, I guess. And she lost a lot of momentum, Dora, but I think she didn't lose as much momentum as Barnes did by having Wibbs in her wheel for a second there. And yeah, she just sprinted. She was much faster to get back to top speed than Alice Barnes was. And on the line, she just passed Alice Barnes and took the victory here. So very treacherous parkour in the last 200 meters. I think the parkour really influenced the outcome of the stage. I cannot tell you who would have won if...
I'll tell you.
Yeah, Wibbs. If there was no crash, Wibbs would have won.
Yeah, I think Wibbs, she's going to be doubly annoyed. I hope she's all right. She got straight back on her bike, yep. So I hope she's okay. It looked like she was okay. She hit the ground pretty hard, but she's like 99% to blame for the crash, in my view. It's pretty bad error and handling error from her getting her wheel on the wrong side and then sprinting. Nah, she sprinted pretty much straight into Alice Barnes. Like Alice Barnes didn't really move off the line or anything that badly. It looked to me like Wibbs wanted to pass her as close as possible on a bend and pretty much had her head down and barreled straight into her back wheel.
I'm going to bring forward a point here. This is going to be like, this is next level. I'm not blaming anybody. This is how I apply the current UCI rules, which is really annoying. We know that in the organizer's specifications, it says that the final 200 meters at least should be straight. The word should, and it's also in the specifications. So those are guidelines and not necessarily rules. So that's a mistake by the UCI, in my opinion. The last portion of a sprint should always be straight. It causes this issue, and it also causes another issue. We spoke about Alice Barnes taking a route to the finish line that is not parallel to the road. That means that she's not holding the same lane on paper, because the lane on paper follows the road, which means that on paper she broke the deviation rule, which is stupid. No. On paper, she did, but it's stupid. And as a consequence,
I don't know about that.
Person who didn't change lane and kept the same turn, yeah, crashed. I don't think that Alice Barnes is to blame. I think that this is an issue with the deviation rule again. And the issue comes straight from the fact that they don't have a rule that there shouldn't be a bend in the last 200 meters, and I hate it. Because every single time something happens like this,
I agree, but
we're going to talk about it.
Lerner Vibes has got either side of the road to choose from. Barnes is in the middle of the road. There's no one around.
She wasn't going into the corner.
And she sprints pretty much straight into Alice Barnes. So I think she would have won the stage. She was coming really, really fast. She definitely would have beat Barnes. Whether Jolien Dora would have been able to get onto her wheel and win as well, I don't think so, based on the how those two have fared in the past. But maybe I need to go back and look at it more closely. I guess it's a little bit... Benji's looked at it a bit closer to me. He's put it on Twitter. Benji's put it on a thread on Twitter with some screenshots, etc. So maybe that's to go and have a discussion there as well. But Jumbo Visma, Benji, Caroline Schwinkels third, Anna Henderson fourth, both on Jumbo Visma women. I thought they'd be sprinting for Henderson. Charlotte Kuhl fifth, Amy Peters sixth for SD Works. Georgia Danford seventh for Andy Schleck's team. Engelveld hung on to eighth for GT Krush Tanap. Marjolein Van't Geloof for Drops. Lacolle came ninth, and Amber van der Hulst came 10th for Park Hotel Valkenburg. Park Hotel Valkenburg were doing a fair bit of work bringing things back. Norsgaard 11th, Hosking 15th, and Brennauer 16th, Benji, the best placed. So that's the best placed Movistar, Trek, and Therotizit WNT Pro Cycling riders. That's disappointing for them.
I think it's all because of the chicane. Because they went into the chicane with Norsgaard sitting two wheels behind the group that eventually got loose in that chicane. And if that chicane wasn't there, then Norsgaard with her Movistar ride that was next to her would have been able to creep back up and would have been able to sprint for it in the end. But here she got basically cancelled out because I think that one rider who went to the barrier, when she went back in, she kind of ruined up the peloton a tiny bit. Not on purpose, obviously. She just tried to stay up, which is a miracle, to be honest. And I think that ruined the options of anybody in that second group to do anything, going from Norsgaard to Marjolein Van't Geloof, who was also, I think, sixth in Le Samad behind Norsgaard, who got second there. So, yeah, I think a lot of decent sprinters didn't get their opportunity today. And I think that we might see some different top fives in the coming results if it comes down to a proper sprint in the end. And I think all in all, it was a really fun race. It's very fun to see young riders come to the fore in those breakaways throughout the stage, creeping up and displaying their colors. And just the fact that we don't see coverage of this almost ever, a continental race in women's cycling. And I love that it's there because now we can do what we do with men's racing. And we can analyze, ooh, who's going to be a talent in the future? Oh, this is going to be fun. This is a young Dutch rider who can do well in the future. That kind of stuff. And that's what I'm so intrigued about in cycling. Looking at the lower grades of cycling as well and see who's going to pop up, who's going to move up, who's a young talent, and who's going to step into world tour in the coming years. And something like this gives an opportunity to that. And we don't have that often, so I'm celebrating it.
All right, tomorrow, time trial. From Lauwerszug to Lauwerszug, these names, 14 kilometers, pancake flat in northern Netherlands. There's three names, I think. Van Dijk. Who else? Oh, Brennauer, sorry. My brain just shut down. Brennauer. And Emma Norsgaard, Benji. She came second at Chrono Donation in 2018 when she was like, a mere child, 18 years old, or 19.
A mere child.
She came second in Le Samen, second in Omloop. She should have won one of them if she had a better lead out. She was the strongest rider in definitely Le Samen. She was the strongest rider. I think Norsgaard might win based on how, yeah, I think Norsgaard's a good shout tomorrow. But who do you pick? Is there another name I'm missing?
What's the time trial of Alice Barnes like? Because I genuinely don't know her time trialing capabilities. I haven't seen any of her the last years. Eighth in Strategy Challenge last year. So
it's pretty good.
She's up there. Leah Kirchman from Sunweb, DSM, also pretty good at this. So yeah, I'm going to go with an outsider. I'm going to go for Leah Kirchman.
Okay. I reckon Norsgaard might have cost herself the GC by being not getting some of the bonus seconds today. But yeah, they've got the ITT tomorrow, which I think she'll do well at if pure power and positioning is not as important, obviously. But that's the Healthy Aging Tour Stage 1 wrap-up. We'll be back tomorrow with wrap-ups of Paris-Nice Stage 5, Tirreno Stage 2, and Healthy Aging Tour Stage 2. Hope you enjoyed this beast of a podcast. Go and check out our show partner, LeCole, www.lecole.cc, in the link in the description if you need to get yourself any new cycling kit. And we'll be back tomorrow. I've got to go sleep. Benji's got to edit all these. Ciao.